Good morning, everybody.
Welcome to this education session. Alan is going to explain to us what integrated reporting means, why it is useful or not.
Not necessarily. I was going to start with a disclaimer in a minute anyway. The purpose today really is, I think a lot of you get asked at conferences and when you're talking to people, what's integrated reporting about? Can you explain it? What's our role? What are we doing? You know, we're involved with it. What's our involvement? You know, so there are lots of questions I suspect you get. And if I was in your position, I think you might find it difficult to answer some of those questions because we really haven't given you much of a briefing on this. And so the purpose of this session is to, you know, if I'm successful at the end of it, at least you'll go away knowing a bit more about integrated reporting, what our involvement is, and be able to answer some basic questions about it. It's also important, last week, Michelle Prada announced the trustees have approved the signing a draft MOU between us and the Integrated Reporting Council. So I'll explain just a couple of small elements of that. There are some caveats on page two, and essentially the Integrated Reporting Council doesn't operate quite the same way as us in that there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes, and they're working really, really hard on a draft framework. And so while I'm privy to access to some of the material, it hasn't been through, you know, some of the due process, and so some of the drafting phases. And so rather than giving revealing publicly advanced copies of bits and pieces, I've tried to work with the material that's public. So this tends to be what my view is, and also trying to give you a sense of what I've been saying at the working groups and technical task force meetings I'm at. In other words, because I sit there sometimes and I sort of I'll fight or push for a particular view, so I want you to understand what I'm saying there. My view is not always the same as everybody else at the table. So that's the caveat. And sitting in the audience today. Caveat.
In New Zealand, you have more K.
Yes, but even worse, we have somebody from Integrated Reporting here who's going to correct me every time I get this wrong, and he's Australian, so he's got a worse accent than me.
Okay, sorry about
that. That's all right. Every day. So, if you turn to, basically this is a sort of a walkthrough set of slides, which I'm used to having them up on a screen, but essentially, I just want to give you a little history. You know, people always said you don't need to know the history of a bicycle to be able to ride a bicycle, but sometimes history does matter, and I want to give you a bit of context because back in about 2009, Prince of Wales set up a meeting to try and get a catalyst for all this and to set up what essentially became the Integrated Reporting Committee and then Council. The reason I think that's important is that it grew out of sustainability reporting generally, and the Prince's Trust was very interested in environmental issues. My recollection is it was a little bit earlier than 2009, actually, that some of the original work was actually being put together. And so the reason it's influencing people I think it's affected the way people have thought about integrated reporting, because it had its roots in I think, a lot of environmental or sustainability. And every time the word sustainability is used, people associate that with the environment. And there is a lot of truth that that is. A lot of the people involved in this project are very interested in the environment and sustainability as it relates to the environment as well. But not everybody in the project comes from that camp. As you see, the basic committee to a council, and I'll just give you a sense of what our involvement is and how it's structured. There is a large council that's a forum for senior people. I brought with me somewhere. There's a list of all the people who are actually IIRC members, and it's a very long list. But all of the major accounting firms, their CEOs are on that. Russell Pico, who spoke on Monday at the Disclosure Forum, is a member. So there are a lot of wide business interests, as well as people from things like the Carbon Disclosure Project, Climate Disclosure Standards Board, and others have got quite a wide variety of interests. People from Corporate Governance Network, others like that. So you can see these are different parties or actors in the whole of the reporting framework.
Who appoints the council? Is it self-appointed? Whenever you finance, you are part of the council?
No. Well, we don't finance.
Who finances the organization and who appoints the council members?
Oh, gosh. I'd have to ask Mike to check it. So it's financed by, there are lots of things in that. They fund it through, they have a pilot scheme I'll talk about where a lot of companies actually volunteer to participate in this and experiment with integrated reporting. And they pay, I think, 50,000 US or something like that.
Yeah, 50,000. 50,000.
A bit less than that. They pay, though, to participate in that. So there's some funding from there. The major firms have all chipped in as well, I think. And so lots of different organizations around the world have considered this to be something worthwhile, you know, funding in a sense. If you think about it, you know, it's not that much different in the old days to the old integrated, it's to the way, you know, international standards developed, the old ISC, in that it's got funding from different types of sources. And so it has a budget. I can't remember, it's in the millions, but it's got a budget and to get through at least foreseeable future in terms of the next 18 months or so, but it is dependent on a lot of funding and stuff like that. So you don't have to pay to get a seat here. We certainly don't pay. The others who do, so some of the professional bodies
are funded. Some are the council because they fund,
yeah.
And some others are invited because they are qualified people.
Exactly. And one of the questions, you know, that if you look at the list as well, the FASB was on the council, but now they've asked to be observers to that, as opposed to being full members of the council. So they maintain an interest, but I think in the US in particular, there's a sense that integrated reporting is not mainstream, and it doesn't appear to be that closely on the SEC radar. So it's a bit like the way we dealt with management commentary here. It's deemed to be not the FASB's territory, so they tend to be slightly more cautious, perhaps, in their involvement in it. But it's a, you know, quite an impressive list of people. But they essentially, we have, Hans is on the council as our member, Ian's a permanent alternate, so Ian has been to most of the recent meetings. I think you've been to one or two?
No.
Yeah, I went to one as an alternate for David when he was on it. And, so essentially they meet and provide general oversight and guidance. They also have a board, which is more the operational side of it. Mervyn King's the chair of that, because is on the board. He chairs the council, and you'll see it's essentially got a group of people that Paul Druckmann is the CEO, and it's got a group of others, a couple of non-executive directors, and so on. So that's kind of like the operational side of it. We then have a working group, and so the working group are the people who are actually trying to put together the paper, in a sense, and the framework and all the background papers, the discussion paper that came out a while ago. On the working group itself, it's actually a reasonably big working group, so it's not what you would call... I've got a list here, and the outside parties can't see it, but it's something like, can't give you the number here, maybe 35, 40 people on the group. So it's not, when we say working group, it's hard to get 40 people into a room and roll your sleeves up and discuss things. So, again, it draws from a wide range of people. You've got Global Reporting Initiative, you've got sustainability people, you've got equity analysts, for example, a couple of people involved in our own CMAC are involved in this group as well. I'm on that, Ian Ball, who was CEO of IFAC, chairs the group with Jessica Fries, who came initially through the Prince's Trust, and I'm the representative of the ISB on that, so I participate in those sessions. Then we get smaller. We have a technical task force, and we're the ones who are supposed to roll our sleeves up slightly more and actually work with the secretariat, in other words, the people who are actually doing the real work. So most of the work in terms of the writing is not done by the task force, but it's actually done by a secretariat, and there are people who are actually seconded into the IRC. They work out of the ACCA buildings here in London. They've been given a floor there to work from, and there are people from all around the world. We've got Australia, the US, Japan, and others, and they will work within a team actually doing the work, and then they meet with the technical task force to get feedback on how we work, on how the writing should be put together, all the documents. Charles Tilley, who is CEO of CIMA, I think that's right, CIMA, chairs that group, and again, I'm on that particular group as well. Then they have a series of subgroups. They are the technical collaboration groups. Business model, capitals, connectivity. Olivier is on that group. We'll talk about connectivity soon. I'm on the materiality group. So we have these interesting conference calls about materiality and what does materiality mean. And from our perspective, which is interesting debates, given that it's relevant to us as well. There's one on value and another one on assurance. So these are much smaller groups. What they've done is they've found a sponsoring body, but at particular groups like the AICPA in the US is taking the lead on materiality. So it's got a core group of people there, and then a series of other people slot in and actually provide feedback. So I think maybe it could be 15 people or so on the materiality calls when we're actually on the line. And the idea is that they're trying to feed in all the discussion about materiality into the discussion paper or the framework. So they're kind of like the specialist groups.
What's the ultimate goal? Is it to develop concepts or to go as far as trying to having some standards being published?
Well, there are mixed views on that, because I think they also have a governance task force, which is a separate type of thing. They've got to work out what they are going to do long term in terms of whether they have a framework or standards. And we'll come back to a couple of those aspects in a second, but one of the difficulties is if they said, well, integrated reporting is really important, we should develop standards for it. The question we have to ask is, should they develop standards for the financial reporting aspects of it? And I think the most common view I hear is the answer is no, because we are the specialists. We produce, we know about financial statements or financial information, so we are the specialists in producing that. Other places like some of the Climate Standards Board, for example, they might be much better, they're better than us, at creating standards for things like carbon emissions. And ICGN, the corporate governance, maybe they are better at identifying good measures for corporate governance and so on. So you've got these different bodies all doing parts of overall reporting. The integrated bit is trying to bring that all together. So we don't know, you know, we have these discussions about whether ultimately the Integrated Reporting Council should actually, if it's successful, it will disappear. Because the integrated reporting will be hosted by somebody, or else do they still have to maintain and be a separate business focusing on just the integrated aspects of it and have these other bodies underneath that actually do the standards level type thing.
Is there any country who are adopting this kind of a framework?
South Africa has brought it in. Mervyn King is from South Africa, and he's there is a requirement, I think, for the companies listed on the South African Stock Exchange to prepare an integrated report. So that's the first. That's an interesting thing. I hope this doesn't be careful about the way I say this too, because it's an evolving situation in South Africa, because one of the first things people do is, oh, can you show me an integrated report? And it's actually, there aren't that many good examples that we have of complete integrated reports. We've got pieces, bits and pieces, and the Integrated Reporting Council and the Secretariat are building these examples on a website, and they're using the pilot studies to try and get these examples. So even though it's been in South Africa now, we've been, you know, the experience I think was in some cases people simply took their management commentary or MD&A and crossed out that title and put in a new title, Integrated Report. So they didn't necessarily change much in terms of the way they were conveying, but others have taken it far more seriously than that and actually started to work with it. But quote you once, there is...
Is there a definition of what is an integrated report?
I'll come to that in just a second. Somebody said, am I looking forward to the session? And I said no, because everybody has a view on integrated reporting, and it's going to be so hard to get through in some sort of structure. But there's something... I've got a quote in here, sorry, can you give me just a second? I can't find the quote now, but there's an acknowledgement, you'll see, when this framework comes out, there is acknowledgement that this is an evolving process. It's a relatively new process, and it's evolving. So I think people know that this is not a mature process. It's building over time.
Following up on Jan's point, I know a great number of companies which have very, very thick annual reports containing all sorts of good things. Everything you can think of, you can dream of, all sorts of reports on human resources, environment, corporate governance, all that. And what's the difference between that and an integrated report?
there's a little word called succinct, which is in the succinct or concise. And this is one of the big debates that goes on about whether integrated reporting is additive. Does it add to the burden, or is it supposed to actually replace some existing reporting requirements? And, this was where we have long debates about this. But one way of thinking about it is if you took MD&A, for example, in the US, or you took the front end of an annual report where people are explaining things, integrated reporting should replace that part, because all it's supposed to do is to have a far more balanced view of a wider range of what they call them capitals in here, but essentially a wider range of different aspects. If you let me get through the next two slides, then that will give you a better context. Then you can start. It might help a bit. Okay, the discussion paper defines integrated reporting, as you see on slide 9. Okay, I think it is. And it says, basically, integrated reporting, by the way, the definition is going to change when we get to the framework, but I think this is a helpful way of thinking about it. If you picked up an integrated report, say one from South Africa, it should bring together information about their strategy, governance, performance and prospects in a way that reflects commercial, social, environmental context in which it operates. Okay. An easy way, and want to walk through a couple of examples on the next slide. Essentially, instead of just saying, here's our financial report, it wants you to relate how the company is managing its resources and opportunities and risks related to other things that might affect you financially. And you'll see soon that they relate
that
to things.
That might affect you financially.
Well, they can affect you financially, like the environment and whether you are dealing with limited resources, for example, whether part of your supply chain relies heavily on low-cost labour, and whether that's a sustainable, I use that word, deliberately sustainable model that you can work on. We've seen recently that they do talk about climate change, for example, and we've seen an increase in the US in number of storms, and how do you cope with storms? You know, how do you cope with major disruptions, for example? And so it's all about how you manage risks and a wide set of risks.
That might affect you financially. That's just about everything in the world, of course. But is that really part of the definition?
I'll come.
Or is that the closing of the definition?
Yes. Okay, so let's go to the next slide then, investors. Who was this report for? Okay. The audience for an integrated report, it says, and this is while the communications that result from integrated reporting will benefit a wide range of stakeholders, they are principally aimed at the providers of financial capital. Providers of financial capital are therefore the intended users of an integrated report. So the intended target, okay, is qualitatively the same as our group. It's investors, okay, providers of financial capital. If I jump down and talk a couple of examples in there. I've listed five little things here. And if you think about the environment, apart from our air travel, I guess, we are not really an organisation that has a huge environmental impact. Okay, so for us, the environment is probably not a huge thing. I don't think we outsource a lot of low-cost labour. We insource it, I don't know. But we don't outsource a low-cost labour and so on. So what's important to us in terms of social responsibility, the environment and so on, perhaps it's a narrow set. Whereas somebody like, an example I use, I hate using real examples in public, but it's recently in the press, BP, for example, we now know that they are unlikely to get an exploration license in the US for some time as a consequence of the problems they had in the Gulf of Mexico. And I think for exploration companies, how they manage their environmental risk is actually going to is big for them. It affects them financially. So that, in other words, don't just report your profits. Tell us how you've been managing the risk.
Any listed company in most jurisdictions is already required to have a full description of the business model, yeah, and the risk factors. So it's just a new definition or a new word. It's a new word about something which exists in the 20F or in the French findings or whatever. I see a full description of all risk factors. Maybe it's done by lawyers, maybe it should be done by other people to make it a communication tool rather than pure compliance. It's another aspect. But, I mean, the concept of what's important to investors is already known for decades.
It is, but I think that the Integrated Reporting Council would challenge whether it's actually a requirement in every jurisdiction, and it's also not an international standard. So there's a comparability.
IOSCO has standards on that.
Yeah. And this is giving some, hopefully giving some context to this as well.
I'm not involved in this one, but I can see two positive sides, but I worry more. Positive side on first one, the integrating side. Yeah, this is what we also want to do, and through XBL and others, you know, it is, you know, this week's disclosure forum is a good example. You know. And another good aspect is the environment. Definitely, you see the last months up to now, China faced tremendous, you know, flogging issues. You know, people feel hard to survive. But on the other hand, you know, I worry more. You know, in the past 2 decades, you know, we see wave of new initiative. And 10, 15 years ago, maybe people know more than me, you know, related corporate governance. And that side is good, push a lot. But during that period, also, a lot of people said we need corporate governance reporting. And if you see the content, and most of them relate to financial reporting. But of course, the new initiative related to corporate governance, good side. And another way we social responsibility reporting, and that already. And now got new ones, and my concern is, you know, during the corporate reporting discussions, people say the corporate governance reporting will become a garbage bag. If people feel want to put some in, you can put in.
Super OCI.
So, yes, super OCI, yes. But yeah, you know, what are those items finally will really become survived ones people all feel it's useful. And I see, as I said, only two pieces I feel relatively useful. One is integrating side, and another one is environment, of course. But if we do want to encourage and force environmental reporting, nothing to do with integrating. You know, it's two different story. And you also touch, you know, the social responsibility side. And think about our organization. You have nothing to do with the environment. But let's assume there is a severe case around our board about, you know, the racial discrimination, all the gender discrimination type of things, and create a huge, you know, very carefully, and then people said, oh, we need such kind of reporting, how to, you know, protect women's, and how to, should these kind of information be in the framework? I feel hard, you know. This is why I worry, you know.
Well, that's a question. We're involved with the Integrated Reporting Council, and that's part, you see, the reason we're involved is if you have a look and see what is important for a reporting entity, financial information will just about always be there. I can't see a case where it won't be relevant. So it's kind of like a cornerstone. But we're not in there saying that you have to do corporate reporting on corporate governance, or you have to do reporting on the environment or social responsibility, and that's one of the issues here about this is about integrated reporting, but they have no ability to compel anybody to do anything. You have to get governments to do that, and if governments do that, what I think this is about is saying, well, how do you do that rather than a series of silos? Because there are corporate governance requirements in places, and there are environmental in some cases, and there are all sorts of initiatives going on. The integrated reporting is saying, instead of just having all these silos and having them add up and add up and add up, why don't we actually think about this in a more integrated way? And that's why, and this whole concept of materiality is really important, which is why I've got it on here. If you don't interact with the environment, it's not that much of a concern because of the way you operate, then you don't have to do a lot of reporting about it. And it's a very important concept. It's what is important to your particular organization. That's what they're trying to do. And then how do you integrate that and report that in a cohesive way? You know, The other examples there, and I'll come back and I'll get Olivier to talk about connectivity in just a second, but, you know, I said outsourcing labour practices. You know, there are cases where some IT companies rely very heavily on low-cost production, and is that sustainable for them? You know, whether working with scarce resources, the fishing sector, for example, if you're fishing for cod, for example, that's a limited resource. How are you managing that? What's your model? And so that, you know, as Philippe says, in some jurisdictions you're required to do those, but I think the tendency is that they are in silos, and this is about bringing it together.
I agree. It's a kind of reorganization more than adding new concepts or new requirements.
Yeah.
Alan, can I ask about the second bullet?
Yes, here. The enlightened or long-term investor. Yeah, I was going to come back to that.
Particular word, enlightened.
Yeah. Well, the reason I put it in there is because that is a term that has been used in the discussions at time about the enlightened investor or the long-term investor. And I think...
Is it the same thing?
Well, some people...
Not in my experience.
No. Some people think it's the same thing in that... I think the loose use of the term was that an enlightened investor is somebody who thinks more holistically. In other words, they think about these other issues about how a company interacts and so on. In other words, they can see what's going to happen to it. They see that it's not a sustainable model, that they're going to hit problems, and so they build that into they factor that in. And you can call that either they anticipate what's going to happen in the longer term, how they're managing their resources, and therefore they're more enlightened. But the reason I use it is that has been used around a lot over the last 3 or 4 years, and it has slowly come out. I don't think you'll see that term in here at all in any of the material that comes out of the Integrated Reporting Committee now, I hope.
Is are the users of the Integrated Report the same as the users that we specify in our framework?
Yeah, that's a slight change as well, because this Integrated Report is supposed to provide a concise report, okay, on information that's material and helping assess an organization's ability to create value in the short, medium, and long term. Okay, so it's about the whole life cycle, essentially, of a company. So you need information about it short term. The example I often use is with a bank. It's all very well to talk about the long-term investor in a financial institution, but, you know, if the bank sinks in 2 weeks because it has short-term liquidity problems, then you can think about the long-term all you like. It's just not going to get there. So short-term is important, medium-term is important, your ability to weather storms is important, as well as the longer-term. So it's supposed to be about reporting short, medium, and long-term risks. And it's moved away in terms of the language from talking about the long-term investor, and which I think is very important because, as I say, I don't think you can go on a long-term journey if it sinks early on in that journey. So it's got to be able to weather storms, and short-term investors are just as important as long-term investors. So
you said that financial information would obviously be a key part of this. Do they anticipate that the financial information is the same as produced in an IFRS set of accounts, or is it a different set of financial information?
My sense is it is the same. In other words, you rely on us to develop financial reporting requirements. The fact that the objective, in other words, providers financial capital, is essentially aligned with our objective makes it just a lot easier. But I don't see the actual content changing. What they're interested in is how, you know, you might make these great profits in the short term, but that's by doing something like, you know, stripping out a mine, or else you can have, we can report better short-term profits, and we're a pharmaceutical company, and the reason we've done that is we've shut down our R&D, so we don't, you know, if you've got nothing coming through your pipeline, you might report higher profits in the short term, but nothing coming out. And so they want to get a sense of what your model is.
Along those same lines, though, it seemed to me that the notion of integrating all this information would have an impact on our disclosure requirements, perhaps.
In which way?
Well, instead of they aren't in place now, but in the discussion paper on extractive industries, we had a lot of recommended disclosure. It seems to me that if they want to integrate and not do silos, then those disclosures should be integrated with environmental impact discussions and regulatory implications of what they're doing, etc.
This is the dilemma in terms of, you know, I said this is supposed to be replacing some reporting in a sense. It's what is the reporting it's replacing, because people want to get a sense of how the company, the extractive activities company, their financial returns, how they're managing their environmental risk and so on. But on the other hand, I think there's a strong view that underneath that will be the financial statements. In a sense, just the same way you look at a financial, an accounting report now, the cornerstone is, or the, you know, about a third of a bank's report is financial statements. And that, I think people would be very nervous if we just took that away and replaced it with an integrated report at a higher level. So I can't see the financial statements disappearing at all. So I don't know if it'll change our disclosure requirements. It's more of a case of, you know, that top-end report. You know, if anything, I guess I would see the integrated report as being, and that's why I put that here on the next slide. If you look at the management commentary, what we've got, you know, I have described loosely that integrated reporting is a bit like management commentary on steroids, in that it kind of, we have the sense in there about, tell us how you're managing risks and resources, but we don't flesh it out. Integrated reporting is just fleshing that out. So it's kind of like your management discussion up front, as opposed to replacing the financial statements at the bottom.
But going to the messages we heard on Monday, weren't some commentators suggesting that what's in our financial statements is duplicative of what's in the management report, and they think that it would be better if they weren't duplicative and rather integrated? That's what I took away from what they were saying, that our financial statements don't tell a story, don't communicate.
Yeah. I'm not sure what to take of that, because I agree, they say it's duplicative, it duplicates material, and so you've got stuff up front and then you've got more detail at the back. In some cases it's better to do things together. But I'm not sure that people would want to have all of that information. We've got financial statements necessarily together. They might want to sort of tell the story and then it's backed up underneath. You know, you could, if you want to extend this, you can go into XBRL and sort of saying, well, do you then want to support that underneath with all this other data that's sitting on websites and so on? Mm. And so I think this is one of the big discussions about what is integrated reporting designed to replace, as opposed to, and how does it relate to financial statement information now? Is it supposed to, are we supposed to just take all the financial statements and produce one cohesive report? I think the answer is no. It's more of a case of the management commentary up front. Instead of that just being an overview of the financial statements, it does the things that they, in some jurisdictions they do. It brings those other aspects there together. But the extra little bit is, when you report on the environment, what standards do you use for that? We've got good standards for financial reporting, for financial statements. Have we got good standards for environment? And have we got good standards for corporate governance? So it's actually making sure that those standards are there so that there's comparability as well.
Mary, you first.
My sense from the consultation paper put out about 15 months ago is not entirely consistent with what I've heard, and things might have moved on since then. It was that certainly financial is one of the six capitals that you're seeking to move in, probably a presumption that IFRS is how you measure the financial capital. But rather than IFRS financial statements being at the core, it was rather excerpted information. And I think one of the tensions that was noted in that paper, it comes back to something else we heard on Monday, is to put the business model and how business risks are managed at the core of the integrated report. Which suggests to me more stress for us in terms of how much is the business model driving how we structure reporting standards. And I'm not sure how that business model discussion has evolved over the last 18 months at IARC. Do you have any updates or insights? Because my sense is that financials go on a website and are the basis to support select KPIs that get picked up in the integrated report, rather than financial statements as we know them today being at the center of an integrated report.
well, it's probably my bias of saying that the financial statements are the centre. The whole thing about these capitals and their social relationship capital, human capital, natural capital, intellectual capital, and so on, is that each business is going to be affected in a different way. You know, and it's kind of, that's why I think companies like Microsoft are involved, and you know, because they've got, it's a lot of the intellectual capital as well as some environment about the huge environmental impact of the way they operate their cloud equivalent. And HSBC is involved because that intellectual capital is very important for them and their and managing reputational risk and so on. But in every single case, I think there's underlying that financial information will be critical to any assessment. I don't think integrated reporting says, it doesn't say that it's the cornerstone is financial reporting. It's saying we want to get a holistic view of a business, how much, which aspects or parts of the capital are more relevant to you. Like, I don't think natural capital is a huge thing for us. Natural, important to you, it depends on whether it's material. So it's all going to vary. But my thinking is that in every case I see in a report, in a greater report, I think financial information is going to be always there, whereas right. I don't see as much of some of the others.
Right, but on the business model, and that was really where I was coming at it from, if the whole point is integrate how you report for an entity across the six capitals and put the business model and the business strategy at the heart of it, so you could have three banks and each one with a different strategy might approach the risks differently, isn't that going to create tensions for us if it's a much more business strategy, company-specific reporting model than our standards, which, while they have, for example, in segments, business, you know, business model focus, and then some of our standards, there's business model focus. It's not the driving basis of our reporting.
Yeah, well, I guess we have that tension at the moment because we had that tension when we discussed segment reporting. We have that when we discussed IFRS 9, for example. So we already have that, but I guess we haven't, and it's something I haven't given a huge amount of thought to, is whether or not the integrated reporting would change the types of discussion we have here about how important the business model is. I've always seen the integrated reporting as that people... I know that that thinking about this holistically can change the components, but essentially you've got people working in relative silos, and the integrated reporting is trying to bring that together. And part of integrated reporting is actually trying to get people to change their thinking within organisations as well. In other words, by pulling things out of silos, they change the way they manage things. So it could affect the way we think a little bit, but I'm not sure how to deep those implications are.
Helen, we should ask questions of the relation with our disclosure. You know, my worry is about the boundary. You know, during one of our conceptual framework valid meetings on the disclosure framework, I particularly asked the questions about the boundary. Should we draw roughly? And take example raised during Monday's disclosure forum. The gentleman, I think, who was the activist, the country by country reporting, and you can say it's related to environment or exploring oil gas company, and assume you know the call so loud, and people come to us again. Now we deny, because we say it is not our job. You know, our responsibility is provide information to master creditors. In this case, it looks like you know, relate to the corruption and others, and. How can we deny such kind of call, you know, if, you know, in the future, the wave is so strong?
Yeah. The question is, who has responsibility for mandating that type of information? It's like, put country by country reporting aside, think about general environmental information. Is it our responsibility to mandate that? And if you're going to mandate that, how do you set standards for that? That's not our role or responsibility at the moment. It's not within our mandate. And I think that's the same debate you have with country-by-country reporting, is whether or not that's part of our mandate or not. And if it's not part of our mandate, integrated reporting may pick that up. You come back to the same thing. They can't sit there and say, you have to do this. Governments actually have to make decisions. One example I use is some people think that our balance sheets are wrong because we should build in the cost of pollution and all those sorts of things. Well, my answer to that is we do if but only if a government actually turns essentially polluting from a public good into a private good by pricing it through these emission trading schemes. We don't develop a standard that says, well, we're going to work out what we think values are. We implement what other governments actually, in our case, turn into financial assets or liabilities. And similarly, it's up to a government to say country by country reporting. That's at the moment. If that's the case, then maybe that would be integrated, not what integrated reporting does.
This is the what Ray Gove touches on is indeed the big danger of this whole project. In a perfect world, environmental consequences of what you do as a company should be priced into your profits or the materials that you use, and all environmental consequences of what you do would become part of the price and would become part of financial reporting. If you deplete resources, it should show up somewhere. If you do environmentally damaging things, it should show up and should increase the costs of your products. Now, what may be going on is that countries or politicians, either because they are narrowly, there is not a global framework in which you have to do it, and it is almost impossible to do it on a national scale, they don't do anything at all, or because it's politically very unattractive to do so. They don't want to hurt their own industries. So the necessary pricing in of an environmental damage is not happening to the extent that should really be the case. And the reaction might be, well, we're going to use this as a substitute for our own inaction, our own powerlessness to do so. And, that I think is especially the case for an environmental, the environmental part, which I think should be an integral part of economics. And there is also that danger with labor practices, which I mean, every properly functioning company pays a lot of attention to its workforce, et cetera, et cetera. But how, to what extent is reporting on this really all that essential to the investor? I mean, does the investor want to know? I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah, no question. I just want to interject a comment here. In 2008, the CFA Institute published a report, a manual for investors entitled Environmental, Social, and Governmental Factors at Listed Companies. And in the document, and I'll send it around to everybody, it provides kind of the issues that you should be aware of in these broad categories. And it actually provides case study analysis of here's a company, here's the fact pattern. Here are the issues that you should be aware of, and these are the kinds of questions that you should pose to management, and here are places that you might consider going to get further research. Interestingly enough, obviously, the first one is MD&A. You know, to the extent it's a major issue, you would think it would be on the dashboard of the CEO and CFO, but there are other places you can get information on it. So it's absolutely a critical issue from an investment standpoint.
Yeah, so the investor wants to have in-depth knowledge in the human resources policies of companies. And
I don't know whether human resources is
employees are allowed to play volleyball in the breaks. And
I don't think that's what you're talking about. Yeah, we're talking about, you know, issues dealing with social responsibility. Let's say they may have a problem with pollution. You know, they've been bad corporate citizens in terms of the way they've polluted the environment. Things like that.
Yeah, it's whether it's material, because that's...
Right, because that has an environmental liability consequence to it.
It has to...
Well, So I'm not saying that is nonsense. And as far as if you have indeed taken huge environmental risks for which you might be held liable, I think even our standards already require disclosure of that. So that's not so much... nothing new. But this goes further, and I think the risk is that this may serve as a substitute for imperfections in the market caused by political problems, etc., and that it might be even more heavily politicized.
than what we are doing, which is already heavily politicized.
I mean, I think I could make the case to say that if these issues are really that prickly, you probably have a requirement to discuss them in your MD&A, your management commentary today. So I'm not so sure we need to have this grandiose framework, you know, for the process. But you know, any guidance to highlight the fact that it's important. But I actually think that many of, as Hans just said, our standards today, our management commentary, would call for disclosure of this if it was critical.
Yeah, I think there are two things to that. One is that, as I said, underneath these factors, we've done a pretty good job with our standards and financial statements and financial aspects of it. But if I asked you to report CO2 emissions, you could probably go and choose a range of different ways of doing it and don't get comparability. And the hard thing is, although it is really challenging, is the integration aspect. And so what they're doing is trying to develop and encourage really good ideas about how to express things in an integrated way, the connections between these things, so that it's not just two separate reports on issues. That's where a lot of value is getting people to share this, the trade-offs that you've got. We've only got a few minutes left to focus on this. I'm not quite sure you want to go on it, but a couple of little things in here. There are two slides in here about principles and content elements. They aren't that much different to our management commentary, actually, in terms of the idea in a report is it should take a more strategic way of thinking about it. You should think about the connections between the parts. It's got a future orientation about how you expect to manage things. It should be concise and reliable and focus on material things, the things that are important. One I haven't put in there, which I thought was interesting, is neutrality. It actually emphasizes neutrality in there as opposed to prudence. And then it talks about the content elements. In other words, when you read a report, you should see something about what its business model is, sort of how it operates, its context, its risks, what opportunities it's got, and so on. You know, how it's managing those things, how it's remunerating its staff. The very obvious examples, you think in the banking sector, how you reward your senior manager and so on with the bonuses. How does that link back to value creation in the business? That's the type of thing, the type of example that often comes up in these debates. So it's not just about environment, but clearly in some industries, environment's very important. What they're trying to do, planning to do, is that it's a draft of a framework that sets out these principles, explains what the capitals are, you know, the financial capital and so on, how the guiding principles work, what materiality is. I use that as an example. When we first developed that, there were some people who were pushing to say it's material if it would affect the assessment of an investor or the governing body. And that's quite a different definition of materiality than the one we have. And it's evolved, now doesn't mention the governing body. So the materiality definition is not actually much different to the one we've got in our standards as well. But the whole framework is being put together with an expectation that it will be published on the 16th of April for a 90-day comment period. So they're moving quite quickly to try and get the framework out there. There's a working technical task force and working group meeting in 2 weeks from now in Paris, and then not that much after that, I guess, a couple of months after that, they expect to put it out there. In the long term, we don't know how it's going to work out because we don't know whether the Great Reporting Council will effectively just create its own demise by trying to get this brought into another organisation. You know, some have suggested that we should take over this because it really is not much more than management commentary, but with some more guidance, I guess. Others have said it should be a separate body. So we just don't know how that's going to actually evolve. As I said, last week the trustees approved us signing an MOU with the Integrated Reporting Council. And it's mainly about cooperation, and it shows our commitment to having people like Hans and Ian to the council, me to the working group and task force, and Olivier, one of the support groups. Plus sharing information as well, and it says that we're both committed to high quality business reporting. So that's something that we're looking at doing because we're interested in sharing information on this. And I think it's like all the other parties on the Reporting Council, we can review once we've got feedback on the framework,
steps we take.
So the draft framework will eventually lead to a finalized framework?
That's the idea. Yeah.
And will there be any further documents after that?
Unknown, is Michael? Yeah, unknown at this stage as to whether we have standards to go underneath it or whether we are not. At the moment, you can argue we've got standards. And I guess the question is, are there some areas where there aren't standards that somebody was developing them? But the Integrated Reporting Council doesn't necessarily think that it should do it. It's trying to be a catalyst to try and improve the quality. The reality, they just think if you look around the world at financial reports and whatever exists in some jurisdictions, they're just not getting a holistic picture of how people are managing their risk in the longer term. That's the catalyst. I say longer term, but short, medium, and long.
Why don't we have discussions in public?
I think it's early days for this organisation. They're trying to work out what their corporate governance structure ought to be like. That's partly why we've been involved as well. We've been actually able to provide them some very good examples of corporate governance challenges that we've had as an organisation, including things like they've got to work out how to appoint their council members and how to replace them, and who do they report to, and they sound like similar sorts of issues to us, and funding mechanisms and all those sorts of things. They have developed some due process. There certainly is public discussion, and all the comment letters on there, the framework will be public. They're looking at doing more of a form-based comment thing, so people can actually fill, I think, on the web to provide feedback. And if they don't do that, they've still got to do it in an electronic form so people can cut and paste. All those will be public. So it's just early days, and it's such a wide, eclectic group of people, I think. The advice has always been just get on with it. And that there's no mandate, in a sense, to actually do integrated reporting. As we have a mandate in a lot of countries, people use IFRSs. There is no mandate at the moment for integrated reporting, so why would you set up a system where everything has to be done in public with all these meetings when you can just actually get on with the job? And if the framework that you produce actually gets some traction, then you can start to develop more of the public discussions due process, just as we did over the last 15 years.
Okay, Alan, thank you for this clear presentation. Let's take a 5-minute break and then start the break.